I am joined by Michael Joseph of Liberal Van and the Manx Taxpayers Alliance, who's standing in Douglas East. Now, first and foremost, Mr. Joseph, a question coming at a slightly different angle than the normal question here. Do you think you're a local or a national politician?
So I don't see a conflict between the two. I think that the best way to represent the interests of Douglas East is to include and to consider all the issues. And so that's why, you know, speaking to local residents, they've told me about the importance of Douglas Promenade, which obviously goes through the heart of Douglas East. That's a local issue, but it also becomes a national issue in how our Department of Infrastructure is led and managed and guided.
And a lot of your policies, they're focusing on the broad brush issues, affordable housing you've mentioned particularly. Do you think, though, you're missing some of the local ones, the Douglas East issues, the parking issues at all?
Sure. So if we talk about Douglas East specifically, you know, obviously the promenade is a big issue chatting to local residents. But also as we go throughout the constituency, in fact, talking of Douglas Prom, you know, the Rotary Club has had a fall in membership over the last 10 years by about half. The Methodist Church attendance has dropped by about half. Once upon a time, we used to have basketball games for men and especially for women down at Summerland, and so those community institutions are the core of Douglas East, but they also reflect a broader challenge in our community and in our civilization to overcome and to rebuild as we come back, bounce back better from the pandemic.
So you think you can marry those two up? Well, I want to ask you, you did take part in the Douglas South by-election last year. You lost out narrowly. Why are you coming back for more? What makes you sort of confident that you can deliver in Douglas East?
So I think what's important to remember is that there's no shame in getting knocked down. There's only shame in staying down. I think what's really important here is, you know, Douglas East, it's my community. It's where I work. It's where my office is. It's where I play. It's where I serve. I've got a long, you know, connection to Douglas East. You know, I first moved to the promenade, I guess, more than 10 years ago now. I've lived throughout Douglas, and I think I spent even 6 months living over in Onchan. But, you know, what I think is really important there is that every week when I'm volunteering for the food bank and I deliver food to the people in need in Douglas East, I see that they need someone who will stand up for all of us, not just the establishment, not just the insiders, but someone who will be a voice for all of us.
And we'll get to those issues. But just revisiting last year, have you identified why you think you missed out?
I think the best people to ask is the voters, and so I think that that's a question you'd better put to them.
Okay, well, we'll work onto your sort of allegiances then, Liberal Vannin and the Manx Taxpayers Alliance. Now, you sort of stepped away from Liberal Vannin and then stepped back towards them. So, what should the voters make of that?
So I don't know what your understanding is, but I formerly served as the chair of Liberal Vannin. I now serve as the secretary of Liberal Vannin. You know, there was my good friend Paul Weatherall was able to take on that task. You know, I wanted to ensure that, you know, when I engaged in my own personal professional activities, I was not the chair. You know, I served as the chair for, you know, a year and a half or thereabouts, and I thought that was the right time to conclude that. I certainly have not stepped away from Liberal Vannin at all. I've been a member continuously. I'm still the secretary of the thing, that continues to
this day. The Manx Taxpayers Alliance then, which you did create in a professional capacity, yeah. Then, do you think there's a conflict between Liberal Vannin and the Manx Taxpayers Alliance?
No.
What are the aims of the Manx Taxpayers Alliance, to clarify?
Sure. So the Manx Taxpayers Alliance is a not-for-profit lobby group, you know, and akin to maybe the Manx Farmers Union or the Chamber of Commerce or the Trade Union. And it's about being a strong advocate for transparency in government, to ensure that we get good value for money, and to ensure that taxes remain low, fair and simple.
Why not just do that through Liberal Vannin?
Well, I think they're a separate organisation, and I think that our community, as I was saying earlier, is challenged by a lack of institutions. It's really important to build up new and strong institutions in our community.
So couldn't Liberal Vannin offer that challenge?
Well, I guess you'd have to put it to Liberal Vannin. I think that they're different organisations for different purposes. One is a political party and one is not a political party.
But both have political aims.
I don't think so. So there is very strict regulation about what is and what is not a political party. And so I think that we need to remember here that these sort of trivialities about the regulatory environment of political parties is a bit of a distraction.
But you don't think the Manx Taxpayers Alliance are lobbying for political things like lower taxes and better spending of public money?
So I think that the Manx Taxpayers Alliance is a strong and is building to become a strong lobby group, like the Manx Farmers Union, like the trade union movement, like the Chambers of Commerce. And I think it's about time we had someone who stood up for the poor guy and the poor women who have to pay for all these things that this government keeps on doing.
But you don't think there's any confusion for the voter there with you being Liberal Vannon and Manx Taxpayers Alliance? You don't think there's any confusion?
So I'm endorsed by a political party being Liberal Vannon, but I also have a full-time job. I think that just as, you know, in fact, coming into the station this morning, I listened to Tim, an interview with Tim Johnson, who is a candidate, and he is a man who is a... you know, has a full-time job, and he also works for his lobby group as well. And I think that that's very normal, especially in a small community, for people to wear multiple things. And I'm absolutely involved in a whole bunch of different organisations, from the Manx Taxpayers Alliance, the Liberal Vannon, to the Isle of Man Netball, to the you know, Isle of Man Food Bank, through to the, you know, whole bunch of different organisations. And I think it's really healthy to have people who are involved in our community.
Well, there have been questions, and this is your opportunity to meet them head-on, about the sort of... funding of the Manx Taxpayers Alliance. Who else is in it? You always mention we, and we've only seen you from the Manx Taxpayers Alliance. Can you use this opportunity to just be transparent about who's backing it, who's behind it, as you?
Sure. So the Manx Taxpayers Alliance is funded by various Manx residents, and so that's the situation.
And do those residents, do they have a vested interest in what you do? I mean, obviously they do, because they assume they pay for you to do this. So do you not think the public deserve to know a little bit more about why you know, who those people are?
So anyone who's a member of a private association is welcome to do so. I think that every member of a private association has a natural right to privacy. It is literally illegal for me to out them. And let us also understand that there is a long and sordid history of trying to uncover the private backers of private organisations. And it is a history that was arose in our civilisation by white supremacists in Alabama immediately after World War II, who launched tried to do such things into the National Association.
It's just how you show. Surely that's deviating from the original question, which is: are you going to be transparent about who's supporting the Manx Taxpayers Alliance?
So every member is welcome to be private or public about their support as they wish. It is literally illegal for me to you know. Obviously, we have privacy.
But do you not think it matters to the voter to know who you're working for? If who you're working for has a political or economic interest to gain from your activities in that role?
So I am employed by the Manx Taxpayers Alliance. That is my employer, and you know, just as there are people who work for other organisations, I don't see a difference between that and, you know, being expected to identify, you know, the customers or supporters
the role you have in the Taxpayers Alliance isn't like a normal job, because you're an active lobbyist, you're an advocate, you are public facing, you are the role of a lobbyist in an MHK is quite similar. Do you not see why that distinction is quite blurred, and why you need to be transparent about the motivations there?
Not really. And I think that what is important to the voters and the people of Douglas East, as I chat to them, is having someone who will stand up for them, someone who will be a strong voice for protecting our environment, for protecting the promenade, for protecting and building our economic future. And I think those are the issues. And I'm not really interested in having an argument about or conversation about such distractions.
So to clarify, you don't think there's anything that you need to declare to the public that you think would be pertinent in this case about the interests of the Alliance?
No.
Okay. And would you step away from the Alliance if you are successful in this election?
I'd expect to, yes.
Yeah, and that leads me to another question. Liberal Vannon has a history of candidates stepping away once they're in keys from the party. Now, some have said if a Liberal Vannon candidate chooses to do that, once they become an MHK, they should resign and seek re-election. What's your stance on that?
I agree.
And so you would be doing the same thing?
I'm the member for the candidate for Liberal Vannon. I am deeply ensconced in Liberal Vannon. I'm a part of Liberal Vannon, and I think that these sort of distractions are very interesting to people, you know, who are interested in politics. But the things that are far more important is having people who rebuild our community organisations. And that's why I've got a strong track record. And that's the things that the voters of Douglas East have really spoken loud and hard to me about.
We'll speak then about affordable housing, which was the priority when Manx Radio asked you, that you put first and foremost. So what is your solution to this affordable housing issue?
Fundamentally, the current problem that we have with housing is it's a little bit like a game of musical chairs, where we have very limited supply and we have people fighting over those chairs. And the result being is that big bullies are able to come in and to take the chairs away from the local Manx families. And so what we need to do is we need to do two things. First of all, we need to ensure that there are enough chairs for everyone, there's enough houses for everyone. And second of all, we need to ensure that bullies are not coming in and speculating on houses because, as my good friend Peter Caron likes to say, houses should be about building a family nest, not a nest egg for speculators.
So what's your approach then? Because some people have suggested we need more homes. Some people say we have enough homes, but they need to be brought to a proper standard. Others have suggested some kind of controls on who can buy properties, no buy-to-lets, no people buying second homes from across. What's your what would be your actual policies to deal with this?
Sure. So the two policies are broadly around the idea of ensuring there's enough supply, that is building more homes.
Greenfield or brownfield?
So let me finish a sentence. So that's around ensuring especially affordable housing. And so I think that will be a mixture of housing, especially, in the centre of Douglas. We have a whole series of essentially ruins where we have the Lord Street site, the Parade Street site. We have along South Quay and we have North Quay. And we have all these wonderful sites in the centre of our town, in the centre of Douglas East, which we can use much more effectively, and we should be using them first and foremost.
Well, the government has struggled to get to grips with that issue. How would you accelerate brownfield? Would you see more government investment, better relationship with business? How would you encourage that?
Okay. So I think that the government has been a significant impediment. So, for example, immediately adjacent to my office on North Quay, which is right down there in Douglas East, we have what was formerly the nuisance building. And the building is literally falling apart, but the so-called experts in the government have prevented any development. They've prevented some really quite well-adjusted and well-considered plans to invest in a cafe along there and then a whole bunch of housing in apartments which would be very affordable. And so I think the first step is we've got to use what we've currently got available.
We'll move to an issue that some people have raised in relation to affordable housing, wages. Do you have a policy for wages? Do you think we need to be working to increase wages?
Yes, absolutely. I think that we really need to ease the squeeze, and that means on two sides. Both, but first of all, we've got to do things to reduce the cost of living, and so that is things like housing is obviously a big part of that, and then we've also got to look for opportunities to increase wages, and that comes by increased productivity. And so that's why I'm a big fan of investing in infrastructure, whether it be broadband, whether it be roads, whether it be whatever other infrastructure is needed to increase productivity. But second of all, in terms of training and vocational training, and especially around ideas such as giving an opportunity for everyone to prosper, not just the elite that can go to university, but rather to enable everyone to attend and to train and to be productive, because that's the real way to increase income.
So how would you do those things? Because some of those things that require spending. How would you fund these proposals that you've outlined there?
Sure. So I don't think a lot of them do require spending. And so, for example, there are a lot of there's a significant demand for tradesmen and tradeswomen, for people to work in that, and that inherently implies there's an opportunity for apprentices and for that sort of work. That is an opportunity for young people and also adults who might be wanting to reskill to earn at the same time. And so I don't see such avenues as being about expenditure. I think it's about income.
And do you think the issue with that is some businesses, they want the qualified personnel straight away. How do you incentivize them to take on apprentices?
So fundamentally, they need to have enough work. And so that's why I'm a big fan of building houses. So that and building houses is good, not just for the cost of housing, but it's also good for our employment opportunities. It's good for wages. It's good for the environment.
For the environment, because some people have ecological concerns about building. To be specific.
Sure. Well, there's no ecological concerns about building houses on North Quay or South Quay or on any other ruined sites. It is a tragedy that Summerland has been left in ruins for so many years now.
What would you do with it?
Let's build on it. Let's use that as an opportunity for housing or for other community facilities. It'd be wonderful to see an appropriate memorial for the tragedy that took place there. And I think that there's no credible ecological concerns about building houses in central Douglas.
Moving to COVID recovery, we've asked all our candidates about this. What do you think are the most important things the next government needs to get right for the COVID recovery of the Isle of Man economically?
So the next opportunity, we need to bounce back better. And that means about ensuring that there are opportunities for new careers. You know, I've listened to a lot of economic commentators who have said that the COVID year, as it were, or 18 months, has compressed maybe 5 or 10 years of economic development and economic change into 1.5 or so. And so that's why, you know, I think that we will see increasing demand for people to work from home in professional careers. That's why I'm a big fan of investing in broadband and investing in that sort of infrastructure so that people can work from anywhere, but work from the Isle of Man. I think that secondly, we need to do things to, like, you know, invest in housing. One of the consequences of more people working from home is that they are more likely to need more space, because where they previously would have gone to work in an office for a day, they may, you know, want to have a dedicated room for working at home, which increases the demand for space, which further increases the need for housing.
Well, I want to ask you about a priority you actually outlined to Manx Radio, rebuilding community organisations. Now, can you explain a bit more about what you mean by that? I think you alluded to it at the start of the interview, but if you'd like to expand.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of organisations in our community that are struggling and some that are thriving. But I think that when we look across our community, more and more people are engaging in individual activities, most obviously in the context of media consumption. So previously, people would have listened to Manx Radio all day, but now they can listen to it on podcasts, streaming online, when and where they want. And not just on Manx Radio, but also they can listen to Amazon Prime when and where they want. They can watch, you know, Netflix using what they want to watch and consume what they want to watch. And the result being is that we no longer have those shared, or we have a reduced number of shared community moments. And so that means...
What's the impact of that? Do we lose our communities as a result?
I think that our community is weaker than it might have been 10 or 20 years ago because we no longer have those shared community touchstones of, you know, for example, you know, a big divorce or a big marriage or neighbours is no longer talked about by everyone at the same time. You know, the closest, you know, maybe modern example might be something like Line of Duty. But even that, the ratings for Line of Duty are smaller than it would have been 20 years ago. And while, of course, that's just a TV show, it means that when we meet in our coffee shops, in our offices, and in our tennis clubs, in our hockey clubs, in our football clubs, we no longer have quite as many things to talk about. And especially with more people working from home, I think there's a real risk of loneliness. And so that's why I'm a big fan of supporting, you know, the equipment and the infrastructure that people need. So, for example, I met with the Isle of Man Netball Association the other day, and they talk about needing more space, more facilities, because they are a wonderful opportunity, not just for people to play sport and obviously the fitness benefits that come from that, but also the opportunities to talk and to socialise and to chat. And I think that healthy institutions is the antibodies to so many of our challenges.
So where does government's responsibility lie there? How would you as an MHK seek to foster that?
Yeah, so I'd be a big fan of promoting community infrastructure, whether it be town halls or be community halls, whether it be, you know, whether it be netball courts, whether it be tennis courts, whether it be, you know, football pitches. Those are the sort of things that I'd like to see the Isle of Man government invest in the future.
What would be your first priority as an MHK should you be successful in this election?
So I think the first priority is about ensuring that is about being a strong voice for all of us to ensure that we have enough housing. And I think that
accelerate the national housing strategy, perhaps?
Look, I think we need to go beyond the national housing strategy. I think we need to invest and to allow people to build. And so the first thing I would want to do is I'd want to meet with local charities. I'd want to meet with local not-for-profit groups. I'd want to meet with local developers to see what we can do to remove and reduce the impediments to building on sites such as in the centre of our town.
Do you think there's going to be appetite for those changes because we've gone through a massive area plan process already?
Yeah, because I think that we now need to go beyond that area plan. That the area plan obviously covers a large chunk of area, and so we've got to speak with local residents about you know, what is appropriate for each and every street. You know, I keep coming back to it, but right in the centre of a town, we literally have a whole series of sites that, you know, might have been bombed out, it looks like. You know, they are literally in ruins. And so these sites need to get construction working. We need to get people working and to start building.
A question I've asked many people, you talk about being a strong voice. Would you be willing to accept consensus where it had to be made in the House of Keys? Because, of course, you're going to be one of 24 should you be successful. You might not be able to win on all of your ideas. You might have to make concessions. Are you willing to do that?
I think absolutely, and I think that's a natural, you know, rationale. So earlier in this interview, you talked about a very narrow loss in the Douglas South election. I was very proud that night to shake the hand of the successful candidates. I was very, I think that what we need community leadership to accept the results. I know in our Western world it is very unfashionable to accept the results of closely decided elections, but I was very proud to do so because I think that what is more important than, you know, what side of an issue you might be here and there is that we are all on the same side of doing what is in what we believe is in the interests of the people of the Isle of Man.
Why should people vote for Michael Josom for Douglas East?
So I think people should vote for Michael Josom because they know that I'm deeply involved in our community, whether it be as a volunteer for the food bank, for the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, in our sporting clubs, in our other not-for-profit organisations. And I think that track record shows that they will get someone who will be an advocate for all of us.